All right, well, let's get started. This is going to be today a focus on introduction to the field, and we'll look at ethics and scope, and I'm also going to walk you through the assessment process. And just take a moment to look at this slide. It's a little bit of a disclaimer, and we'll talk about this much more in depth when we explore ethics module 2. I'd like to share with you a little bit about myself. I've been a psychotherapist for almost 40 years. However, my career began in the jungle of Mexico, and you can see by looking at these images where I landed. You can hear a little bit of my Boston accent, and when I was 20, I hightailed it out of Boston, dropped out of college, and was so lucky to land in a small fishing village on the west coast of Mexico. No cars, no roads, no electricity, and I was happy as a clam. I felt like I'd found home. And then, luckily also, I proceeded to get sick with absolutely everything. Now, I'd come from Boston where I was a young feminist. I was involved with the Our Bodies, Ourselves movement. I was very interested in the burgeoning role of women and our health care and taking control of our health. And I actually had with me an early version of Our Bodies, Ourselves, and I felt destined to support women in the village. Little did I know, they were destined to support me. So as I got sick with absolutely everything, they were there to help me heal. Now, with no doctor, no nurses, no clinic, they were using herbal medicines, foods, and all things natural. And this was really my immersion into the role of nature and herbal medicine and nutrition. I had trained in meditation and yoga as a teenager, and I was really left to my own to figure it out. And that was, in many ways, the best training I could have asked for. Over the first 10 years of living there, because I did not want to leave, I learned how to do body work. I trained in polarity therapy and cranial sacral therapy. And you see here an image of my working with a client doing the cradle. And when I talk in our somatics module, I'll talk about the role of somatics further. What I discovered is that all those times touching patients, a story would emerge, and the story of the trauma, the story of their pain, some story that the body was telling. And over 10 years of practicing, it made me realize I wanted to study actually how to really converse, not just with the body, which I knew how to converse with, but also the mind, and really develop an integrated approach. And that took me back to, I left the jungle of Mexico and I went back to the jungle of Boston, my hometown. And that's where I trained in psychodynamic psychotherapy, behavioral medicine, post-trauma therapy, and then later in public health. And so that work then led to a private practice for a number of years in Boston. I had the opportunity to do an internship at the Shattuck Hospital, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. I did a fellowship in psychiatry. I had a private practice in both psychotherapy and somatic psychotherapy. And I, however, longed to return to the jungle of Mexico. So after 15 years in Boston, I returned to Mexico and reopened my clinic and was very fortunate to receive funding to run a pro bono clinic and continue my work in community trauma and medicinal plants. These days, my work is all virtual. I have a private practice in integrative medicine for mental health and nutritional therapies. I have a specialty in helping people taper off of psychotropic meds or maybe even never get on them. I also mentor students who want to move into this field, one of my favorite things to do. And also, in addition to this certification, we've developed another certification on diabetes and cognitive decline in Alzheimer's. So that's a little bit about me. One other thing that you'll see and hear through our time together this week is I'm passionate about social justice. I work for the Center for World Indigenous Studies, which is a Native organization. And as I mentioned, we do a lot of pro bono health work in traditional and natural medicine. And culture and cultural diversity as it relates to health and mental health is a real core value I have. So you'll learn some about that as well. So let's begin with a few terms of reference. We use today complementary and integrative health. That's an NIH term that has recently changed. And that refers to when a practice is used together with conventional medicine. It's called complementary. We're complementing usually an allopathic or biomedical approach. Now, if a practice is used in place of a conventional medicine, it's called alternative. We also use terms like naturopathy, and there are many, many states in the United States and, of course, in Canada, Mexico, throughout the world that license naturopathic physicians. And there are basically two kinds in the United States. There's what's called a traditional naturopath. That's someone who's trained traditionally but may not be licensed as a physician. I actually had the pleasure of teaching at both Bastyr and at NUNM, and these programs provide 2 years of medical training, the first 2 years, just like any conventional medical school, and then the next 2 years are all natural medicine. And so I often will work and collaborate with a naturopathic clinician when I'm working with a patient. A licensed clinician might even do minor surgery as well and also be a prescriber. Functional medicine is another term that we use quite a bit, and that's often nurses, nurse practitioners, nutritional therapists, RDs, along with physicians, often train in functional medicine. And this, again, gets to the root cause, and that's going to be one of our themes here. Yes, I'm going to share with you some anxiolytic herbs in case you get anxious about taking that CE exam, which you really don't need to be anxious about. I'm going to share with you how to support our clients' symptoms and alleviate suffering. But the core of what we're going to explore is what the cause is. What are the root causes of our symptoms, and what do we know? And what do we begin to question about what contributes to mental distress and the physical sequela that generally always accompanies it? So we will dabble and touch on functional medicine, naturopathic approaches, and that's what I mean when I say integrative. We're going to explore how we integrate all of these methods into conventional or even an unconventional psychotherapeutic or psychological practice. You see here integrative medicine in our Venn diagram, and you see how all of these come together to create integrative medicine for mental health. Now, I'm going to give you a big buffet of content. And for some of you, I expect you're already in this field. You may already be using nutrition. Perhaps you're doing yoga and mindfulness. For some of you, this may be very new. I want you to think about this literally as a buffet that you can return to again and again. I don't expect that you're going to absorb and digest, you'll pardon my puns, all of this all at once. I want you to just sit back, relax, see what resonates with you, learn some new concepts and some new interventions, but know that as you apply them, you'll be returning again and again to continue to apply new interventions. Indeed, it's not unlike anything we learn in psychotherapy. There are numerous modalities, and we continue to build our repertoire of options. Some of the core values we have in integrative medicine is that we're integrating the body into the assessment. And this is going to be one of your big takeaways for today. If you're not already doing this, this is going to open up so much of the puzzle, and I want to walk you through what those relationships are to look for. We're interdisciplinary. We're working across disciplines and within them. We're collaborating with diverse practitioners, and I want to give you in this retreat a language that you can use with practitioners so that you can share your knowledge and use some language and build rapport with other people who may not know the language of psychology, but you're going to know their language to work with. Dietary interventions are central, and you will hear me say again and again that this is the missing piece in mental health. We're doing psychotherapeutic interventions and a variety of approaches, but if diet is not addressed, we're missing an opportunity because we have to fuel the brain and give it what it needs along with the mind and the rest of the body. I'm going to touch upon laboratory analyses and genomics. We won't go into that too in depth. It's a little bit more advanced. But again, I want you to understand the whole scope of the field. So as you're digesting this and you're intrigued by some of this knowledge, you'll say, yes, I want to go off in that direction. And I'd be happy to show you how. Self-care, if we're not taking care of ourselves, how do we help our clients take care of themselves? And indeed, that is our role, whatever we're practicing, whatever modality, is to enhance the capacity of our clients to take care of themselves. And ultimately, I believe in the healing relationship. I think that healing takes place in connection with others. It takes place in our office, it takes place on Zoom, it takes place walking with a client or showing them yoga, it takes place restoring trust and connection. And because my own practice has been as a traumatologist for many, many years, and we know that trauma challenges the ability to trust, it challenges attachment, I see myself as a vehicle for establishing the template of attachment and reestablishing a connection, often with our most severely wounded clients. So that's a key principle that we'll follow no matter what modality we use. So we're going to explore nutritional deficiencies. For example, a deficiency in B12 can be common in a vegan or vegetarian diet where there's not additional supplementation. This can lead to signs of cognitive decline. Are we seeing true mild cognitive impairment in a middle-aged or elder, or are we seeing mild cognitive decline due to B12 deficit? How about low levels of magnesium leading to muscle spasms or anxiety? Even conventional medicine uses IV magnesium to reduce asthma attacks, highly correlated with anxiety. So we're going to look at deficiencies and supplementation as the antidote, as potential contributory factors to the symptoms that we see. What about drug interactions on nutritional status? Antipsychotic drugs. We know that these antipsychotics can lead to metabolic syndrome, leading to diabetes and a whole other host of problems. I'll talk a little bit later during detox when we explore coming off medications or tapering or reducing, the role of some of the SSRIs in suppressing mitochondrial function. We know that some of the PPIs, the proton pump inhibitors, along with benzodiazepines, are associated with a risk of dementia. So I think in my practice and in many of my mentees' practices, we're seeing a flood of individuals who want alternatives to medications. And as I share with you ways to build your niche practice, I want to encourage you to consider this as a very viable area to develop an expertise in collaboration with prescribers. We know that statins, and we've got an epidemic of statin use and a fear of cholesterol, a real overblown fear of cholesterol, and I'll talk about that in a next future module. We know that it depletes coenzyme Q10, required for mitochondrial function, required for energy. So we've got lots to do not only with supporting healthy lifestyle, but working with our clients to perhaps eliminate some of the exposures that are causing them greater risk. So we may look for alternatives or synergists to pharmaceuticals. We're going to explore the role of food allergies and sensitivities, for example, the effects of gluten on depression and psychosis. We know that there are very high rates of sensitivity of people who are depressed and with psychotic disorder, who are sensitive to both gluten and casein. Infections, toxicities, and even genetic vulnerabilities. Mold is a newly discovered factor in the development of Alzheimer's, the APOE genetic risk factor for dementia. And then how we look at genetics and biochemistry and nutritional status altogether, and then ultimately providing an individualized plan. This isn't cookie cutter. There's no one right size fits all. This is really bringing individuality to our clients so that they thrive. I organize all of my work based on a concept I call the Brainbow Blueprint. And as you see here at the top, bioindividuality. This means that we are all different genetically. We carry the genetics of our ancestors, whether we come from Europe, whether we're indigenous to the Western Hemisphere, whether we hail from Africa, Asia, the northern climes. Those genetics determine much of our health, our strengths, as well as our vulnerabilities, and most important, as I'll share with you in our nutrition module, how we digest food. So this is going to be central to our work in understanding our patients. An integrative assessment, as I mentioned, if you are someone who works in mental health, your next big step in assessment is going to be to integrate the assessment of the body and the complaints of the body, the soma. If you're in physical health, then integrating a mental health assessment is going to be vital to understanding what's going on in an integrative, holistic approach. I'm going to talk tomorrow about circadian rhythm and ultradian rhythm. If you can balance biological rhythms, you've gone a long way towards improving mental health. Indeed, as we'll discuss, many of our mental health diagnostic categories are rooted in disrupted biological rhythms. Nature, during the break, if you can get outside in your bare feet and walk in that fresh morning dew or afternoon dew or take the sunlight in, please do. You'll feel so much better for it. Human-animal relationships, those of you who've read my work know I work with canine assistants, and what can I say about the value of animals in connection, love, getting out and getting exercise, touch, safety, attachment? It's endless. Culinary medicine, we're going to do a deep dive into food preparation and the role of food in mental health, supplementations, herbal medicine, hydrotherapy and detox. I'm going to share with you some great tips about how to release waste from the body. Think of ourselves as just one big garbage pail. And we empty out the garbage every day, but how often do we actually cleanse the garbage from our liver or cleanse the garbage from our colon? So while we take in food and metabolize it, we also break down waste. How do we enhance that elimination? I'm going to share that with you along with hydrotherapeutic interventions. Hormones, I'll touch a little bit on hormones just as they are important, mostly as we're talking about entering maybe by the age of 35, 38 years old for both men and women, and how those affect mental health, exercise. I like to say that if our clients got an hour of aerobic exercise every day, they probably wouldn't need us. And so I'm going to walk you through, literally, different approaches to exercise specifically for mental health. And I've got a great yoga module demo for you to work with me on. Somatics and body work, this is my passion, the integration of body work and psychotherapy. And even though you may not be a body worker and you wouldn't touch a patient unless you were licensed and trained to do so, knowing when to refer and how to develop a cross-collaborative relationship really enhances practice, and I find it's very rewarding. The breath, spirituality, I find many of my clients are interested. I've got many clients who are atheists, so I want to respond to what their needs are appropriately. Altered states, I'm going to talk a little bit about psychedelic medicine and the role of altered states of consciousness. We're in a big revolution of psychedelic medicine, and because I go back to the 60s, I've watched it emerge over the last many years, and I'm excited about what we're seeing for treatment for depression and trauma in particular, and also death anxiety. And then finally, adherence strategies. We can know all the best things that our clients will benefit from, including ourselves. But if we don't do them, and if we don't figure out how to help a client do them, and we all know it's really tailored to personality, then what good is knowing all of these things to do? This is the same in psychotherapeutic models and motivational interviewing. And when you watch the video today, you'll watch some of what I've done around identifying adherence during my review of the food mood diary with our model patient. So there's a little bit about the Brainbow Blueprint. And one of the things that I love about this model is that a client can enter in anywhere they wish. If a client says, don't talk to me about food, don't ask me to change what I'm eating, then I can say, fine, how about some yoga and exercise? What about spirituality? What about getting out in nature? Or someone may say, don't ask me to move, just tell me what to eat. And so we have lots of flexibility here to get engagement and to get buy-in, and we can move through this Brainbow Blueprint as the client wishes.